Okay, welcome back to the Investigative Journal on this September 29th, 2014 day in our calendar. I'm your host, Greg Anthony, and you're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Today I want to revisit the Tony Alamo story and also touch on the Tupper Saucy story, two people that I've been discussing for the past three or four months. And one of the things I'm doing for both of them is writing a theater play for Tony. And basically talking in this play regarding what he did at his ministry and basically how the Vatican-led New World Order has for years tried to shut him down, so to speak, set him up, frame him for many things. He spent 4 years in jail years ago for a bogus IRS charge. And finally, when he didn't keep quiet and continued to talk about the Vatican as the beast in Revelations when he would preach from the pulpit, and also spend much time and effort enlightening people about how they manipulate countries and control behind the scenes our government's foreign and domestic policies. For this, they continually tried through the minions in our government to frame him, bring him down, and they finally put him in jail for 175 years. And I've been covering the aspects of this case just so people could hear his side of the story. Because what happened, it was, I watched this unfold, and I met him prior to this. And he was telling me on this radio show that they were going to try to do this. And it basically happened almost like he said. And when you have an orchestrated effort by these people, similar to what they did in Waco, but in this case, the guns didn't go off. They came with a huge SWAT team on a ministry in Arkansas where there was only a number of children playing on the swings. And Tony, in fact, wasn't even there. And I think they knew that and did it anyway because they had alerted 150 media outlets regarding this. And if you look at all the things surrounding this case, it was an effort to, in fact, convict him in the public court of opinion and then give him a so-called trial, which by standards of are you innocent to proven guilty, I think this was just a lopsided event, almost a kangaroo court. Not even getting a change of venue in a town that had been poisoned by the media regarding this ministry. And basically, I had spoken to many people, and it's an incredible story when you look at it. And you start looking at the things we talk about in the show and how they play out in real life. And I've touched on it many times, but today I'd like to spend some time talking about what this ministry's done over the years that we sometimes forget about. And I've researched it a bit, have some people send me some information, and I wanted to start by talking about that and then looking at some of the abnormalities in the case. But anyway, I think he made waves, and that's Tony, for preaching parts of the Bible the vast majority of other ministers in this country leave out, and that's the beast, the Vatican. And he's focused on that throughout the years. Now, but his ministry was many faceted, and now what I'm getting at is the reason they came down on him is because he had a very successful ministry. If he just had a church in his backyard with about 30 or 40 people coming every week, I doubt if they'd even bother with him. But when you get a ministry that has a number of different churches all over the country, he had a number of radio shows, he would spend hours on the radio all over the country and the world talking about this, as well as spending a lot of money on brochures that he would send out. But besides all that, what did he do? And what was this ministry all about? And I find that they were always giving out free meals to anyone who ever came to any of their locations, and still does to this day, in what manner they can. And I'll explain why, because there have been not only This criminal case against Tony, they've tried to round up all the children and the people involved in this ministry and basically dislodge it. Not only have they done that, they filed the civil lawsuits have been filed to take away all the holdings of the ministry, which I'll get into in another show, which are extensive. And one of the largest civil settlement in Arkansas history came against this ministry, $535 million. And that's just the tip of the iceberg when you start looking at what they're doing in other in his other holdings in other states. But this is all over 4 or 5 accusations from disgruntled members of the ministry who had been there, and we went over some of their testimony, which appears to be coerced. The FBI and certain DHS agencies took these people into custody and basically promised them gifts. They coached them for weeks to testify in a certain manner. Some of them have recanted and were sorry for what they've said. And it is just amazing when you start looking at the story and how 175 years adds up to what he's done. In comparison, if you look at the number of charges, and we went over this, regarding Catholic priests all over the world, why haven't they rounded up every Catholic child and put them in, you know, and done the same thing, shut down these churches? Why do we still allow, if you look at per capita, if you look at the number of priests in this country who have been charged, or the number of cover-ups that high-level bishops have been involved in. And even if you look at what Ratzinger, when he was pope, what he wrote about prior when he used to run the Office of Inquisition, how he explained that under canon law, it is okay to hide these crimes from the state. Why we haven't shut down every Catholic school is amazing to me. And you can see a double standard here perfectly. But anyway, so from the beginning, I found out that this church had given out free meals to anybody who ever came to their location. And in a day and age like today, you know, when you see so many homeless people we overlook this. Now, they did this with very few donations, as other nonprofits receive by the truckload. And they give a meal, but not only a meal, but they give food boxes to any needy families who request it, clothing, blankets, shoes. And for decades, they had special programs to assist families with members in prison. Every Christmas, inmates can request presents to be sent to their families if they contact this church. And they also sent food, clothes, and Bibles, aside from toys. And they sent children birthday presents as well. And for decades, they helped inmates with certain monies they needed to buy shoes, fans, hygiene items when they were in prison that they couldn't afford. And on holidays, they even supplied Thanksgiving and Christmas meals upon request for needy families. They sent out Bibles, gospel literature all over the world on request. Many people can't afford Bibles, and they would ship them without charge to them. They supplied, like I said, food, clothes. They even gave out water tanks in areas that needed them around the world, helped to build water wells, spent money building housing for people, toilets, bicycles, cars they've sent, and much more. Now, none of this was ever reported, and I'll get into some of the early reports that came out in the second half hour on this raid. Now, all of this, I might add, was accomplished with no government assistance, no 501c3, no grants, no nothing. And what they got for helping was only harassment from many government agencies. Now, I talked to you years ago about policemen in New York. I'm going to take a little aside here to show you what's going on. So here we have a ministry that grew quite large, had resources, and didn't ask any money from the government, told it like it was regarding the Vatican's involvement in our government, as well as his Bible views regarding the Vatican as the beast in Revelations. Now, this was preached from the pulpits. This was normal in the 1800s. Or when this country was formed, all this stuff about the Vatican was normal. In fact, we didn't even want him. A lot of people that came here didn't even want him here. And they wormed their way in, I told you, by getting together with the rich and powerful. And as the years passed on, you start preaching this stuff now, and you're going to jail. And that's why when you go to Protestant churches, and I bet if you did a tour of small-town America, and you went to all these churches. Now, I've been in a number of small towns, and every time I am, I check it out, and I go to these churches, and I see what they're talking about, and none of them will speak openly, except the Seventh-day Adventists, regarding the Vatican. And I find that quite interesting. Now, the Seventh-day Adventists, there's a story behind them as well that leads me to believe they were formed by this very organization, and we can get into that at another time. But all of these things were accomplished without any kind of government assistance. And for this, and I believe if he would have stayed away from talking about the Vatican, that none of this would have happened, perhaps. Not perhaps, I'm sure, because they do not want a successful ministry that can affect a lot of people. Sort of like this, if you're popular, you're going to get in trouble with them. Now, if you have a, if you're not as popular and you talk to a few people, they will, in a sense, marginalize you. They have people at certain levels that come across and start spreading lies about anybody or make this topic of discussion seem to be crazy. And that goes on even at lower levels. But the higher you get, the more trouble you're going to get into. And especially if you reached as many people as this ministry did. Now, I also wanted to mention that when we see this story, we talk about Tony Lama, who's paying the price for what he did, because he was the head of this ministry, along with his wife, his first wife, who really began this thing. And she passed away. But there are many, many other people involved in this, and many lives were affected, and many other people were doing really good deeds over there. And it was depicted by the mainstream as a cult. And I've said many times, if you look at some of the things that go on in the cloistered convents, in the different dioceses, and what happened at the mission schools that the Jesuits set up, the genocide that went on in both America and Canada, if there's any cult in this world, it's that one. The only reason, though, they're depicted as a God-fearing Christian church, or the mother church, is because of their money and power and their deceptive ways over the years. Now, like I said, this ministry did everything without grants or anything. Okay, they also visited nursing homes and hospitals for over 40 years. And they would send a group with musical instruments sometimes to play for these people, to pay these bands to go, or music, people that played instruments to give these people some joy. They would give out fruit, gospel literature, food, etc. They gave testimonies of how people would love to listen to this and listen to the story of Jesus Christ and invite them to pray along with them. Now, they would visit these people, go to their rooms, people that were bedridden, alone. So they did a lot of good things, and these are the people in the ministry. And still to this day, I found out they still have several regular nursing homes they visit in light of all this that has went on. Now, in the late 60s, we look back, they were on the streets daily, offering a better way to those who never heard the undiluted word of God, okay? And that's interesting, because there's so many people in the world that never got an opportunity to listen to the other side of the story. What Protestant ministers in this case, if we are a Christian country, or we say we are, what were Protestant ministers preaching when this country first began? And so that's what you were hearing. And like I said, everybody has the right to their own belief system, including this ministry. But, like I said, when you cross the line, so to speak. And you know what that line is. The Vatican line of no return. And you're popular and you have a lot of influence. You're going to be attacked like this. And like I was saying, I got off track here, but I did want to mention that if you look, I did many stories regarding several police officers and undercover agents who were involved in vice in New York back during the time of Cardinal Spellman, who basically was one of the most powerful men in the country, according to these police officers in New York, and who's also the chaplain of our military. But when they were researching vice, they had much testimony regarding pedophilia in the Catholic Church, regarding what Spellman was doing to little boys. And when they tried to bring some charges, or when they would try to do this, it was always stopped. So he had protection from the police force and could get away with, you know, child abuse at will. There's a double standard in this country. If you talk against the Vatican, you'll be framed for what they do. It's a good chance that happened in this case. Now, in the 60s, they were busy on the streets offering this, you know, talking about these things. They were trying to, you know, get to people before they committed crimes because they were poor or under the influence of narcotics. And they tried to help people turn their lives around in these poor neighborhoods in L.A. and other places that were riddled with drugs and so on and so forth. Now, they took in a lot of these people. And, you know, when you do this, boy, I'll tell you, it can be difficult. But they felt that if they did this, they could give a person a chance to perhaps hear the Word of God, become stronger, and maybe get off of these the drugs and the problems they were having, and to see a better life is basically what they were trying to do. And they would do this constantly. And over the years, they did this all over. And they also had influence in Africa and India to assist these people. They supported them. And they didn't just go spread the word of God. They did some things, in effect, to help them financially, building certain wells for water, certain things like that. And so, in fact... rather, and let's look at Hollywood, they were, you know, rather than thanks for helping to maybe clean up the streets there in a meaningful way, they were declared a public nuisance. And they were raided by the West Hollywood Sheriff's Department and so on and so forth. And that primarily, I think if they didn't talk about the Vatican, it would have never happened, maybe. And the rest back then, they said, were commonplace when they were distributing literature. And supposedly, according to the freedoms of our Constitution. Now, I can one day, maybe in another show, I'll go and check out some of the unfinished work, some of the things they were doing in this ministry, in a book that was not finished by Susan Alamo prior to her death. And I'll get into that at another time. But what I wanted to try to do here was to, you know, give you an idea that what this ministry was doing behind the scenes, of because all anybody ever heard about was basically this, you know, raid on the Alamo ministry. Tony Alamo's involved with violation of the Mann Act and, you know, sexual abuse, things like that. And that's all that was heard, and it was orchestrated. And because the media was notified, I mean, 150 150 news outlets were notified by the FBI prior to this. And it's just amazing. And here's another idea. Here's what they did to pollute the Texarkana area, where one of the ministries was there. The Texarkana paper constantly ran horrible articles about this ministry, almost daily around the criminal trial. They couldn't get a change of venue. In this article, they boast that the church members were arrested for distributing gospel literature, and the police instructs the public to call 911 if they see them distributing literature on vehicles. Now, how many times do you go out and you get a, you know, you go and you see on your car, you know, Domino's Pizza, 2-for-1 sale or whatever, and you take it and you go, oh, I'm not interested in it, blah, blah, blah. But here they made a big deal about this because it was literature contrary to the Vatican. And I also did a test on this to see what would happen, and I have some literature of my shows passed out in certain areas and put on cars, which is okay. If Domino's can do it, or if people, why can't journalists do it? And I got an email recently. Someone said, quit. And it was anti, sure, of course, talking about the Vatican. It says, quit, what did they say? Vandalizing my car. I don't consider that vandalizing. I consider it, you know, I want you to read something. And it's maybe better than Domino's Pizza. And I'll tell you, I've had a Domino's Pizza, and I don't particularly like it. But anyway, what I'm getting at is they even went to the point of saying it's illegal to put literature on cars in the Fort Smith area, but the Eighth Circuit upheld their right. This was back in 99. To put literature on vehicles and struck down the unconstitutional ordinances against the city of Fort Smith, Alma, Dyer, and Van Buren. Basically, they were told to, you know, to pass these ordinances so these people couldn't put their literature on cars. Okay. Now, they constantly ran horrible articles regarding this and couldn't get a change of venue. And that's just one way they were polluting the people regarding this ministry. And I talked to a number of people. I remember when this trial was going on, and I remember I called. We decided just to call businesses when this trial was going on because they were seeking a change of venue. And I was saying, boy, they can't get a fair trial here if all this is true and what this is going on. So we called a number of businesses and just asked, we said, what do you think of this Alamo ministry? And boy, I'll tell you, every business that we called, whether it was a hairstylist, a barber, you know, a food store, a real estate agency. Oh, boy, the things you heard. Oh, it's a cult. We thank God this is happening and blah, blah, blah. So, obviously, he couldn't get a fair trial there in a small town with a jury pool like that. And they wouldn't allow it, though. Well, anyway, there's more to come next half hour. And I'll get into a few more things, some of the abnormalities in this trial. And you make up your own mind regarding this story. And the reason I'm doing it is it's a good example of what happens to you if you cross this line. And what happened to the freedom of expression in this country, the freedom to speak openly? And basically, what do we have that anymore? I don't think so. Back in 3 minutes.
Hear it first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net.
Visit crosstheborder.org, crossstheborder.org, to get your print, EPUB, or PDF version of the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. That's crosstheborder.org.
I know you all want answers, and believe me, so do I, and I'll do my best to get them.
Despite Nicolas Cage's promise to do his best to get Left Behind Rapture answers for us, don't hold your breath. Not everyone believes Left Behind is true prophecy. Some may even regard as conspiratorial the mainstream re-release of the Left Behind movie with actor Nicolas Cage portraying the main character as an attempt to further reinforce in the minds of all this perception of false prophecy in order to condition the masses for the play about to begin. If you want true Bible prophecy answers, get the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. The author exposes the Latin rapture origin, the seven-year tribulation deception, true Bible revelation of Daniel's 70 weeks, the abomination of desolation, the restrainer, America in the revelation, the image of the beast, and the mark of the beast, and the truth about God's chosen people, and so much more about Bible prophecy. This book will shatter the left behind paradigm of future events. Get the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. Visit crosstheborder.org, C-R-O-S-S, crosstheborder.org, to get your print, EPUB, or PDF version of the book, The Rapture Will Be Canceled. That's crosstheborder.org.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, we're back on the investigative journal for this second half hour, and we're going over some of the abnormalities in the Tony Alamo case, his arrest, his conviction, and his sentencing of 175 years. And we got into some of the things that the ministry did that's never been reported. And I wanted at this time to talk about some of the abnormalities. And we talked about the four or five witnesses that testified against him. At the time that they were being coached by the prosecution, here's what happened. The Cult Awareness Network were paid by the government over $5,000 for each of three witnesses against Tony for an intense two-week deprogramming of their remote location. They were sent to Wellspring Retreat. The government paid for round trips for them, there and back, and even paid approximately $1,500 for the child of one of the witnesses to go and be supervised while the mother was in counseling. They also paid them to go there under the guise of paying the bills. They would not be able to work to pay for while they were there, such as car insurance, etc. And the former head guy at Wellspring, Paul Martin, personally worked on these three of these witnesses, I found out. In the past, testimony. One thing interesting about this case is that it was done. This coaching was done in December 2008, and right after this, he came down with an illness. This is that Paul Martin went to the hospital, was found to have leukemia, and he died several months later. In the past, testimony of those deprogrammed at this place, at Wellspring, was thrown out of court in other cases. But why not in this case? If anyone for the defense even speaks to a witness, you can be charged with tampering, can't you? Yet the government can ship these witnesses to pretrial locations for this kind of deprogramming. And in this case, maybe some of them went from neutral to very hostile against the Lama ministry. And could it be because of they were coerced? Well, let's look more closely at this. And I wanted to bring up some information from one of the families who had their children taken by the FBI. And this is a note they sent to me regarding this, looking back on this case years ago. And they recently sent it to me. And this person said, I'm one of the parents who lost six children to that federal effort. The FBI agent, in this case, his name was Randall Harris, who headed the harassment and was actually coaching the prosecution witnesses at Pastor Alamo's trial, was at just about all of my court hearings, and there were many. Early on in my case, my lawyer approached me, offering that if I would cooperate with the FBI, Mr. Harris, and convict Pastor Alamo, that I would have my children back in 1 week. I refused to cooperate. Having known Pastor Alamo for over 35 years at the time, and knowing that he was being framed on false charges, I couldn't cooperate. These are public proceedings. We know that you, if you want, you can get all this information. Well, some of these, when you get into these child cases, a lot of this stuff isn't public to protect the children. But are they really protecting the children? I think they're protecting sometimes the government's harassment of these kids and the families. Early on in my case, says this, he said, Mr. Krantz, I have my children back in 1 week. I refused to cooperate, having known Pastor Alamo for over 35 years at the time, knowing that he was being framed. The secret child court ran its course and terminated my parental rights, even though there wasn't one shred of evidence that any of my six children had ever been abused in any way. Now, my God, here we go. The state just kidnaps these children. Since the stealing and kidnapping of my children by the Department of Human Services is a two-step process, adjudication and termination, I had to appeal both processes to the Arkansas Supreme Court and then to the United States Supreme Court. That's four separate high court appeals. Both higher courts rubber stamped the lower court's decision without addressing any of the issues appealed. Instead, they echoed the unsubstantiated accusations used in the lower court, which of course was also echoed by the media. I used to wonder, he says, how German people could have suffered Hitler's slaughter of so many innocent Jews. But now it is very clear to me how it was done. And the courts and the media were very efficient tools to demonize the Jews to the point that the general public hated them and believed they deserved to be exterminated. This, by the way, is very analogous to the process used to crucify Jesus Christ: betrayal, false witnesses, corrupt judicial system, manipulation of the masses, a murder. Anyway, I wanted you to know this. I wanted you to know what really happened behind the scenes. And it is amazing what really went on when you think about this. And I'm glad this gentleman sent me this information so I could pass it on to you. And he lost his children over this and basically was told that if he cooperated and lied, he'd get them back. Now, excuse me. Well, something in the air. But anyway, I wanted to bring that up. And also, let's look at something. An article regarding this came out in 2009 in the Texarkana Gazette. And I wanted to read this to you. And the headline is Alamo Ministries, Families Fights for the Custody of Their Kids. The grandmother of a 2 and 3 year old. Now, here's one thing I wanted to mention regarding I think in certain cases, there would be some people, maybe that didn't know Tony as well. That gentleman knew Tony for 35 years and couldn't lie. But let's say you were just in the ministry a short time and you were coerced and you had a choice between your children and turning in Tony and you didn't know him that well. What do you think people would do? And the government knows that. The grandmother, now this story says a grandmother says her requests for children were ignored in 2009. Now, the grandmother of 2 and 3 year old children who recently slept on the floor of an Arkansas Department of Human Services offices, this is coming from the Texarkana Gazette, said she doesn't understand why the agency won't give her custody of the youngsters. The children and their 4 older siblings were among 17 taken from vehicles as they headed toward the Texas border on November 18, 2008. And they were fleeing because they knew the government was coming after their kids. Arkansas circuit judges authorized the removals and amid allegations that children of Tony Alamo Christian Ministry loyalists were in danger of being abused and neglected. That's what the media was spreading. And there's a quote here, how can they possibly be better off sleeping on an office floor than in a loving home with their grandmother, said Dana, this is in an article, said Dana Minera Barrett, who left the ministry 5 years ago. Now, wait a minute. She had left the ministry 5 years ago, and they're after her? So what? She says, this woman Dana said that the DHS contacted her daughter and son-in-law Thursday. And this was Miriam Krantz and Bert Krantz in this article of August 30th, 2009. And Minaret said they wanted them to bring blankets and stuff for the kids because they didn't have any. They stayed with them until 2 a.m. until they fell asleep. The kids were so scared. DHS spokeswoman Julie Munzel said she couldn't comment about the specifics of the custody case, but said children sleeping on an office floor isn't an acceptable arrangement. Well, thank you. The Krantz other 4 children, the oldest of whom is 12, are in foster homes in other parts of the state. For unknown reasons, the 2 youngest children were allegedly removed from their foster placement Thursday, and DHS had no placement for them to go. She learned about the state's mass removal of children hours after it occurred. She said she was at the DHS office in Texarkana the next day. So we have an article here stating that they're taking these children into custody. And it's incredible to me. I mean, Cheryl Barnes of CPS Watch, a Florida organization that advocates for parents with children involuntarily placed in foster homes, said concerns might not have been the financial resources to provide for the kids, and her prior association with Alamo Ministries possibly contributed to the DHS's reluctance. This is just an amazing story. And I keep telling you that what this was an orchestrated effort to tear this ministry down, to frighten parents into lying so they could put Tony away, and pretty much they got 4 or 5 people to cooperate. Now, let's look again at some of this stuff. I mean, if you just want to listen to what the government said and forget about it, then, you know, do we really have a right to a fair trial? Or are cases like this, when you have a popular ministry and you speak up against the Vatican, both in regarding the references and interpreting the Bible in this way, or you start talking about the Vatican's involvement with our government, etc., do we really have a freedom in this country to talk about things that people back in the old days were talking about openly? And there is a lot of factual evidence behind what these guys are talking about. And that's basically what this is all about. Now, how can America put up with it? I mean, are we just going to allow this to go on? And I wanted to bring this to you so you could hear his side of the story. I have a number of other things. Let me see. Somebody else wrote me and said that, you know, the same thing was going on there. And he says one thing. I'm writing, my name is Alex, and I'm writing to you regarding Tony Alamo. And one thing that Pastor Alamo said was very important to be stated on the radio that you are doing is that he wrote literature trying to tell the truth of what happened and defend his case in Texarkana, and they put an ad in the newspaper stating for people to call the police or 911 if they see anyone putting out the literature so that they could arrest them. We've never heard of such a thing before. It has gotten so bad. Now, isn't this after they struck down that unconstitutional law? He said it's gotten so bad in this country that they have taken away the freedom of speech, the freedom of religion, and the freedom of the press so that you can't defend yourself anymore. It's gotten worse than Nazi Germany. Today it's us, and will tomorrow it be you? And that's from Alex who said that. And I find that quite interesting. That if you, for example, I think if you put out information that was completely opposite against a ministry like this. Let's say it's another ministry in a certain small town, and all of a sudden literature was coming out from a Catholic church regarding this. I think they'd allow it to go out, don't you? But if it's the other way around, forget about it. And I think this illustrates the fact that we have really lost our freedom of speech when it comes to this subject. And I can't tell you that it is really a sad situation when we've gotten to this point. And I wanted to say this, that what I kind of wanted to do was to give you an idea, and I think I've given you enough in this show to digest, and we'll talk a little bit more about, we'll talk a lot about it in other shows, but I just wanted you to think about it. It was a effort to, one, look under every rock to try and find a way to frame this guy. Now, let's clear up one more thing on this show. And I got information. In past shows, there was an FBI informant and an undercover agent that was going to testify in the Alamo trial. And he'd been on my show many times because I was trying to get to the bottom of the story. And he'd said that he was actually given the orders to, one, and a long time ago, try to bring this ministry down by planting guns and weapons there. That didn't work. Then he was told to find dirt on Tony Alamo, and he couldn't. He even told me that they were going to have to try to kill him if they couldn't find anything, and he left the FBI. Now, he wanted to testify in this, and I mentioned that the judge did not allow this testimony to come in and said that it wasn't relevant. Well, it turns out that I need to clarify this, and it raises issues about his defense as well then. But regarding Pete, this Peeler, his name was Peeler, John Peeler. And regarding this Peeler issue of testifying in the criminal trial, it never did get to the judge. However, Tony from jail kept insisting he needs to testify, but his defense team didn't think so. I think the defense is supposed to consider, what the client wants, don't you? The defense team didn't think so. I think they figured the Mann Act of intent to take girls over state lines for illicit purposes was so far-fetched that they didn't think it could be proven. And it was not proven. See the jury's second note to the judge. Okay, so we got to get into some of these technicalities in the trial, which I'll do in another show. But he was charged with a violation of the Mann Act, which is to take these kids over state lines for illicit purposes, but it was not proven. But the investigator for the defense team said Peeler was not official FBI or other government agency employees, that they would arrest him since he was an undercover agent in these cases. That they would arrest him if he came to testify and claimed to have worked for them. Tony's attorneys ignored what Tony wanted and never subpoenaed Peeler to testify. Apparently, members of the ministry talked to Peeler, and he was ready to testify, but said we needed to subpoena him. The reason we thought the Mann Act was so improbable to convict was because, well, according to the law, you had to prove intent. The purpose of the travel of these girls was for sex. That's possibly what the Mann Act is all about, folks. The five that testified all lived for years in the same houses. They lived in the same place for years before and after the dates of the 10 counts. If their claims of illicit intent were true, why would travel even be necessary? Think about it that way. The government picked dates for the accounts spanning from 93 to 205. Tony traveled all the time. We lived in L.A., and at least half the year they lived in L.A. year and traveled all over. They had churches in Arkansas on various reasons. To save time and money, they would take a bus. No hotel costs on the road, and a lot of food was bought along the way. There was bunks and plenty of room. Everyone naturally wanted to go on trips. Please avoid, the details of these counts I will get into. I've got them attached here, and I'll go into some of these in another show. But the jury, in their second note to the judge, said that sex did not happen on these trips. If there was intent, wouldn't action naturally follow? So we have a case here where this guy Peeler should have testified. The defense thought it wouldn't help. I don't know about that. I've spoken to him. And I definitely think it would have. Now, the point is, how many people on the FBI payroll, just like they can take a CIA guy and say he never worked for us, but he actually did. The FBI does the same thing. So they can eliminate documents. They can basically say to someone, you're doing this, but if you get caught, you're not part of us. Certain things like that go on. And I think the defense was naive in this case and basically should have brought this man and had him testify. And I just wanted to bring that up and clear it up because I was under the impression that the defense team was going to allow him to testify, and the judge said it was irrelevant, but the defense basically quashed it from the beginning, which is interesting in itself, leading me to believe that he wasn't given his original attorneys, who basically, I believe, were let go, didn't give him a proper case trial to begin with. Now, there are... I have summaries of the counts against each of these people, and I'll go into that in another show. And I will go through the counts that are in the case and some of the abnormalities that you will find in these. And it's quite interesting. And I'll probably do that either tomorrow or Wednesday. It's going to take a little bit of time when you go through these legal documents. And let me just make this clear. The reason that I'm doing this is so you can hear the other side of the story and make up your own mind. And people are going to wonder, why is this case so important? And I said it touches on the very elements that we discuss in this show. Why can't this story, why can't the story that we tell regarding Vatican involvement in most everything we do in this country? I mean, we've been talking about ISIS so long, and I told you where this is coming from. Why can't this story get an even-handed play when there's so much factual evidence that of what we say needs to be discussed in the public forum? The reason is it's being covered up at every level. And I believe this trial was a frame job to keep a man like this quiet and his ministry from growing any larger. At a time in our country when we're falling one by one into the hands of the enemy, which means we will lose our rights, if not already have lost them all, without any hope of returning them. And this war on terror is just one step closer to a one-world order, one-world government, one-world religion. And this is why this story is so important. I wanted to get into the Tupper Saucy story, but I'll do that tomorrow and then days to come. And we'll show you how this, the Tony Lama story and his, work together to show you what's really happening behind the scenes and how this story is of Vatican involvement in all aspects of our life. My God, I did a show the other day, and they have 200 concordats or agreements with governments that give them special privileges around the world. And that should give you an idea, along with the diplomatic relations they have with our country, of really what's going on behind the scenes. And if you begin to have an effect, a large audience, they will try to silence you. That is not freedom of speech or freedom of religion in our country. Back tomorrow. Good night.